From the World Newsroom in Boston, I'm Patrick Cox, and this is The World in Words number 9. Today, the relentless globalization of English. Can it be stopped? Нет, say the Russians. Is English already the language of global commerce? Is it the new Esperanto? Speaking of which, do you speak Knoll?
As a free man, I take pride in the words, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Si se puede, is right. Yes, we can.
There are no knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Thank you, Borat. The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. You can find out more about the show, including how to subscribe to all our podcasts, by going to theworld.org. If you want to write to me, the address is language@pri.org. Also, join the Facebook group, The World in Words. Okay, so one of the big themes of this podcast, something that we're sure to be returning to a lot, is just how popular the English language has become all over the world. We're going to focus on a couple of places today, two neighboring countries, Russia and Estonia. After that, we'll hear from Sol Steinmetz. He grew up speaking a bunch of languages, and guess which one he now considers his first language. We'll wind up today's cast with a report on an Esperanto for text messaging. Texperanto, somebody suggested here. Okay, so how much Russian do you speak? Well, if you think none, maybe you should think again, because Russian is the latest major language to co-opt English words. Hundreds, hundreds and hundreds of English words, and there's not really much that anyone can do about it. Here's a report from the BBC's James Rogers in Moscow.
Visitors to Moscow often complain that they can't read the alphabet and they can't understand Russian. But a lot of things in this country have changed in recent years, and the language is one of them. Let me give you some examples. I've just passed a cafe called Coffee House. I'm now standing near a newsstand. The magazines here are full of whatever products and people the image makers are trying to sell to teenagers. And if I decide that all of this is beyond my pocket, well, I can go to the bank and try to get an overdraft.
Бренд-менеджер на бизнес-ланч сказал мне, что у нас будет тренинг по аутсорсингу.
25-year-old Tanya works in marketing. In a cafe in central Moscow, she's explaining to a friend that her manager told her over a business lunch that there would be training on outsourcing. These new concepts mean a whole new vocabulary.
It's changed fairly dramatically, mostly because of the influence of English.
Michelle Birdie is a translator who's worked here since the 1970s.
So you've got politicians, economists, journalists speaking to a population, and the population really doesn't understand a good quarter and sometimes the most important things that are being said.
I've come to Sergiev Posad, which is about 2 hours' drive north of Moscow. I'm standing in an archway, which is the entrance to a monastery. This is one of the main centres of the Russian Orthodox Church. You couldn't really imagine a more timeless picture of Russia. There are blue and gold onion domes here rising above white-walled churches. There's a steady stream of monks and pilgrims and tourists passing before me. But just across the road from here, there's a restaurant which rejoices under the name of American Pie.
Present, present, present.
This town has become a magnet for tourists, and just a short distance from the churches, there's a little market selling souvenirs like Russian dolls and shawls. The traders, of course, have picked up quite a few foreign words, but let's go and see if they know something about these new words, which are supposedly Russian ones. Let's see, for example, if they know what an image maker does.
Image maker, обычно, это стилист.
An image maker, well, how do I put it? I think in Russian you'd describe it as a stylist, somebody who tells you what to wear.
A teenager, I know what it means. It's got something to do with offices, hasn't it? But what exactly, I can't say.
Что такое овердрафт?
Овердрафт. Это сложный вопрос.
An overdraft? I really don't know. I don't even have the slightest idea what it could mean.
Michelle Burdi says that while many Russians view the changes with suspicion, they are part of a recurring process in Russia's eventful history, even encouraged by a famous 18th century emperor.
Peter the Great brought in a tremendous amount of Dutch and German. During the 19th century, French took over. To the extent that the Russian nobility really spoke French much better than they spoke Russian. And here we go again. So this has happened many times.
That may be so, but the language as it's spoken in Russia today isn't 100%, well, Russian.
That's the BBC's James Rogers. Now, like Russia, Estonia was part of the Soviet Union. But Estonian, the language, is not widely spoken, is barely spoken at all outside of the tiny Baltic Republic. During the Soviet years, Estonians were expected not only to speak Estonian, but Russian as well. That's all gone now. Russian has very much taken a backseat to English as the foreign language that Estonians want to learn. But there are some Estonian officials who are now wondering if their country has placed too much emphasis on learning English. We have this report from Tallinn, the Estonian capital, from Cyrus Farivar.
If you walk into any Estonian high school, chances are you'll hear a lot of English in the classrooms. On this day, some ninth graders at Tallinn School No. 21 are giving presentations on the subject of traveling. One student talks about his recent trip to Hawaii.
And our hotel was near Waikiki Beach, which is one of the famous in Hawaii.
Estonian students start learning English in first or second grade. They often take additional languages in middle school and high school, usually Russian or German, and sometimes French or Spanish. But Kersti Sustar thinks there's too much emphasis on English. As director of the language department at the National Examinations and Qualifications Center, she wants students to get the chance to study other languages early on.
The problem is that everybody thinks and everybody wants to study only English.
She says if Estonian students could master several languages by the time they graduate, it would boost Estonia's international credentials.
I would be glad if we could speak about, in the future, if we could speak about Estonia as a real multicultural country.
According to government statistics, 84% of Estonian students study English. Less than half that figure take Russian, the next most popular language, and less than 20% study German. Maria Matise is an English teacher at another high school in Tallinn. She says it makes sense that students here prefer English.
Well, I personally think that just the motivation to learn English is much higher than the motivation to learn Spanish and Japanese or Finnish, because just the English-speaking world is so vast, and it's just, you know, it's coming from everywhere with films and computer and everything.
And from television. Estonian kids often download American TV shows, says high school senior Josep Jurison, and they learn a lot of new words from them.
There are cases where the English teacher can't understand what the kids are talking about. My friends watch a lot of Family Guy and get their jokes from Family Guy and South Park, so the teachers are in a tight spot. Have to watch Family Guy, get in touch with inner youth.
Estonians often speak about the importance of learning different languages, since their own has less than 2 million speakers worldwide. In fact, some large Estonian companies, like Skype, operate entirely in English, mainly for the benefit of their increasingly foreign workforce. Education official Kersti Sustar says she's working on a plan to make Estonians' grasp of Russian and German just as good as their English. For The World, I'm Cyrus Farivar, Tallinn.
Okay, now we tighten the focus from one country to a single person. Sol Steinmetz is that person. He's the author of a book called Semantic Antics. That traces how words change their meanings over time. He's also a former editorial director at Random House Reference Section. And just as English seems to be winning out in Russia and Estonia, it's also won out inside the head of Sol Steinmetz. It wasn't the first language he learned, but it is the one that has stuck. Here's a conversation that he had with me recently.
My first language was Hungarian because I was born, raised in Budapest in Hungary. Then because my parents were Yiddish speakers, they tried to hide from me what they were saying, but I quickly learned how to speak Yiddish. And then we left Europe and we went to the Dominican Republic and to Venezuela. the Spanish became my language. And then when I was about 17, I came to the United States and learned English.
A language like Hungarian, spoken as it is by tiny numbers of people compared to English, does that make that language less dynamic in terms of the meanings of words? Do they pretty much stay the same over time?
No language ever retains one meaning of a word. All words make changes. The difference between Hungarian, let's say, and English is that Hungarian adopts fewer foreign words. It tends to create its own vocabulary. So it takes a word that exists already in the language and adds a new meaning to it. It borrows only technical terms. It'll borrow a term like internet, for example, because it has no equivalent Hungarian word for it. But it's very, very rare when it does adopt the words of a foreign language. English is a prime adopter. English borrows left and right and adapts it to the language. It'll take from every language in the world, hundreds literally, and make them English.
That's very interesting. So English is sort of outward-looking, whereas a language such as Hungarian is inward-looking.
Very much so.
How about Yiddish? Geographically, yes. That's a far broader language than Hungarian, and it's a language yes. that people have brought with them from one place to another, from one continent to another. And under those circumstances, I imagine that meanings have changed more than with a language like Hungarian.
Yes, definitely more. Yiddish is also a very prime borrowing language. It borrows from all over by the nature of the language itself being not limited to any territory, but wherever Jewish people go, they take the language with them. The word chutzpah, which has been adopted into English, comes from Yiddish, and originally it came from Hebrew. But chutzpah now means nerve, you know, not being particularly nice. It's somewhat derogatory to have chutzpah. At one time, it did mean simply having very outgoing personality. Perhaps the influence of English, American use, has been such that now when Jews say chutzpah, it's the classic case of the man who murdered his father and mother, and he pleaded mercy on account that he was an orphan. And it's the same idea in Yiddish today as it is in English.
Oh, that's very interesting. So there's been almost sort of blowback from the larger language.
Yes, it is.
I wonder if there are indications that you see that some of these words that we see as being having very fixed meanings in the year 2008 will in fact spin off and take on new meanings in the future.
There's every chance that they will. We don't know that yet. All you need is one incident or one use and a change will occur. A good example of that is fulsome. Fulsome originally meant in English very full, exactly what the term it implies, full, some full. One spoke of fulsome praise, meaning great praise. But then over time, someone started using it to mean excessive. By this time, when you say fulsome praise, means too much praise. And there is still, if you look at the dictionaries and the usage described in them of fulsome, is that there are some people who use it in the nice way and some people who use it in the negative way. So this is one of those words that is still not quite ready to take one position or another. Eventually, I suspect fulsome will be a negative one.
Okay, well, here's a word that is brand new and it is very specific to our listeners right now because this is how they're actually listening to us. And I'm thinking of the word that's actually made up of two words, podcast. I wonder if you could help with that.
Well, I can't help you too much with that because cast, of course, has been used ever since broadcast. All they added here is the word pod. Now, the word pod itself refers to a number of things, as you can find in the dictionary. But a podcast, if I know, I'm not sure if I know what it even what it means, is a type of a broadcast that is done from a little pod. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, let me give you the Webster's. This isn't the best definition, I don't think, but it says a web-based audio broadcast via an RSS feed accessed by subscription over the internet.
Now, why is it called a pod?
I think that it came from the term iPod, the idea being that you could listen to these casts on your iPod. In fact, that's somewhat limiting because you can listen to these casts in many other ways aside from on an iPod.
Well, it was interesting that you bring that up because many new words are really old words that have been adopted to modern uses. Browse is a very good example, which I treat in my book. Browse, of course, was originally something that animals did, sniffing around various foods that they could eat. And later on, it was figuratively adopted to someone who sniffs around books. But then when the internet came on, the term began to be used for looking through the various information systems to find new information. So from animal use to human use, it made its entry into the technological world of today.
Sol Steinmetz, he's the author of Semantic Antics. Now, it's clear after listening to him that we can't really control how language develops. Not that that stops some people from trying. Remember Esperanto? That was the new global language designed to unite people. Nice try. Okay, so now imagine the same concept, but this time for people who chat online or send text messages. The language would be written and spoken, and it would have a few simple rules. That's what a guy in Barcelona has come up with. His language is called Nol, and it is catching on in a modest sort of a way. Here's the world's Jerry Haddon.
In his small downtown office, Enrique Cabrejas is writing a novel. It's called 8 Days a Week. He reads from it.
Ampli, betina, labo blaki, mers luke trau ram Dublin.
Through the large, wide windows, she scrutinizes the dark tide in the distance, which brings her memories of Dublin and its northerly winds.
Cabrejas will have a tough time finding an editor or reviewer for his novel, because the language he's writing in, Nol, is only 6 months old. And Cabrejas invented it. The idea came to him while studying Russian in St. Petersburg. The students on his program came from all corners of the world, and they were struggling with the language barrier.
Porque siempre hay la duda de decir, bueno, a ver, si yo hablo español, tú hablas inglés.
Cabrejas says there's always a hesitancy. I might speak Spanish and you English and another guy Chinese. So you break the ice with Nol, and then you can always switch to another language. The key to Nol is simplicity.
A, B, C, D.
It has just 23 letters, and most words look more like abbreviations. That's because Cabrejas envisioned Nol mainly as a written language and not on paper. Rather, via cell phone text messages, for example. In many parts of the world, the more you write, the more you pay, which is why text messaging already has its own shorthand. Nol is even more abbreviated. For example, the phrase, pleased to meet you, in Nol, has just 4 characters. It would sound like this. Cabreja says his Nol website is getting tens of thousands of hits a month from Germany, Russia, Argentina, and above all, Mexico. At Mexico's National Autonomous University, communications professor José Miguel Álvarez is teaching Nol to his students. Among them is Daniel.
Comenzamos a estudiar el Nol.
He says, I learned about Nol in class. I like the language's webpage, and I've been using it to write some text messages. Do I see a future for Nol? Yes. It is beginning to filter into our conversations. And established languages are filtering into Nol too, says Professor Álvarez. He's less optimistic about Nol's future, at least as a global language.
Este es un nuevo idioma que puede trascender.
He says the idea that Nol can transcend borders and unite people who don't speak the same languages is unrealistic. For example, some young people are using it already here in Mexico, but it's combining with the existing text message shorthand. So Nol won't serve as a bridge to others who speak entirely different languages.
Se utiliza como una abreviatura de los propios idiomas.
Back in Barcelona, Enrique Cabreja says that's fine. He says he knew the day he jotted down the first Nol words that this would be his Frankenstein, something he'd create but not control. There'll be a German version of Nol, an English version, and so on, he says. But as the inventor and keeper of Nol and its grammar, Cabrejas wants to make himself indispensable.
O sea, esta comunidad se van a entender entre ellos. Y está también.
He says each linguistic group will develop its own version of Knoll. But if one group wants to talk to another, it will have to pass through my office. We're creating a world online, just like Facebook. This is another place to network, but based on language. Cabrejas says that idea has at least one major cell phone company talking possible sponsorship. And though he insists he didn't invent Knoll to make money, he says with corporate support, Knoll might just grow into a global tongue for the digital age. For The World, I'm Jerry Haddon in Barcelona.
That's it for this edition of The World in Words. I'm Patrick Cox. Go to theworld.org for more. Till next time, bye. That's B-A-I. Knoll.